This is the Airplane Geeks Podcast. Our aim is to educate and inform you, explore and expand your passion for aviation, and entertain you a little along the way. This is episode 660 of the show where we talk aviation, and I'm Max Flight. Now, given that this week we celebrated Independence Day in the United States, we had planned to give you another Bits and Pieces episode. But all that changed suddenly late in the day, July 4th. We'll let Micah explain.
In the USA, the 4th of July, Independence Day, is a time to celebrate. It's truly when summer is happening in full force, and here in Maine, it means the summer is more than halfway over. At the beginning of the week, Maine was in a heat wave. Temperatures exceeded 95 degrees Fahrenheit. That's 35 degrees Celsius. By the end of the week, for Sunday, July 4th, the high for the day was 59 degrees Fahrenheit and 15 degrees Celsius. Plus, it was raining. But believe it or not, it was the best weather of the weekend, so it didn't stop our Independence Day barbecue. I got to visit with some terrific friends, some I hadn't seen in years as they were away teaching in Taiwan and Korea. The last time I saw them, their daughter was about 10 years old. Next month, she's off to college. The party started around 3 p.m. and went on into a good part of the evening. There was bratwurst, marinated chicken thighs, and veggie skewers all done on the grill. Along with that, potato salad, coleslaw, sauerkraut, all sorts of drinks, and some Prosecco to toast a new graduate. Dessert was raspberry, blueberry, and coconut custard pie for a red, white, and blue finish to a fabulous Independence Day cookout. It was a great visit, and a perfect day, even if the weather wasn't fully cooperating. The party started to break up around 7:30, and I left around 8. I had to get home. Launchpad and I had made plans to record a piece about air shows for the 4th of July Bits and Pieces episode. We needed to have it recorded, edited, and into Max by early Monday afternoon. We'd been planning on doing this piece for a while and wrote an entire script for it. We'd talked about it a lot and had put it off and put it off and put it off. I knew Launchpad had an Independence Day planned as well. He was taking his Falk Wolf on display at an air show in Central Texas, and I knew he was going to enjoy it. If you've ever heard Launchpad talk about his Falk Wolf FWP-149D, then you know how proud he is of it, and how much he loves to show it off to others who appreciate beautiful warbirds. Now, as many of you know, Launchpad and I have never met in person. Sure, we've talked on the phone for hours and hours and hours, mostly about nothing. And when I say on the phone for hours, I don't mean over time. I mean, sure, we've had a lot of phone calls, but each one of those calls can go on and on and on. Anyone who has talked to Launchpad on the phone knows he loves to talk. Sometimes it becomes a private joke among his friends. But Launchpad and I got to know each other pretty well while on the phone together. We learned a lot about one another. We found out that I knew him long before he knew me. And if you're not sure what that's all about, check out Airplane Geeks episode 635. So where was I? Okay, I was driving back home from the party to get ready to record with Launchpad, and my phone rings. It's Launchpad's wife, Gabby. I can hear a worried tone in her voice. She told me that she usually follows Launchpad home from his travels via Flight Radar 24, but she hasn't been able to find him on the app for about 90 minutes. She said she also heard of a plane going down in Killeen, Texas, at about the same time she lost him. Did I know anything? I told Gabby I was on the road, but I would pull over and put out some feelers to see if anyone had any information. I suggested she stay put, and I would be home in about 20 minutes, and I would check my responses and call her right back. I did just that. As soon as I got home, I checked in with my sources, and while we could find news about a plane going down in Killeen, we had no other information. I called Gabby to tell her I didn't know anything more, but also reassure her that I was sure all was okay and Launchpad would be home soon. When Gabby answered the phone, her voice was off. I could tell that something was wrong. She said that the police were there and had just informed her. Launchpad was gone. I didn't quite understand what she was saying, but didn't want to ask more. It just wouldn't process in my head. The conversation was less than 2 minutes. She was in shock. I want to say that I gave her my condolences, but I'm not sure what I said. We promised to be in touch later, and I let her know to call me at any time for any reason. She had to go finish up with the police. So what can I tell you about a dear friend who was someone I never met, but knew very well? Someone who, even though we never met, knew we were friends, and I mean good friends. Someone that I was planning on meeting for the first time in just a bit more than a month, knowing that our friendship would only solidify more. I suppose this is what you say. Launchpad was bigger than life. I mean big, both in personality and in size. He was loved. And that's not right either. Launchpad is still loved. He was perhaps the biggest of all supporters of aviation social media, putting together Potapalooza at Oshkosh every year. And he was a chocolate lover. Not so much for himself, but his gifts. If you ever met Launchpad at Oshkosh, you would walk away with a handful of imported German chocolate. But Launchpad wasn't just loved, he loved back. He cared about people. He liked to make them happy and make people smile, let them know they were cared about, and keep them safe. Whether it was helping his young Eagle passengers feel like a part of his crew or donning a Nomex suit to run into a burning dormitory, risking his own life to save the lives of fellow residents, Launchpad was there for you. He loved general aviation and he loved warbirds. He was an active member of the Commemorative Air Force and a proud part of the ground crew of B-29 Fifi. And Launchpad was a family man. Launchpad loved his father, loved his son Eric, and loved his wife Gabby. You could hear it in his voice whenever he talked about any of them. Launchpad is someone so well-loved in our aviation podcast community of friends that you just can't believe he's no longer with us. I can't believe I lost a friend I never met. And sadly, for the first time in my life, I lost someone I knew and was close to in an aviation accident. After I heard the news from Gabby, I sent out a frantic text to Max, telling him to call me ASAP. He did. There was no way to explain it easily, and I must say that we were both pretty broken up over the phone. We worked out notifications among us geeks, and here we are. So what can I say about my friend Launchpad? Someone I knew for years but never met? How can you really miss someone you never met? I can't explain it, but I know I do. For the Airplane Geeks, here in Portland, Maine, this is your main man, Micah.
Thanks, Micah. Joining me, besides Micah, is David Vanderhoof, Max Trescott, Hillel, and Isaac Alexander. And we're hoping Rob Mark will be able to join us in progress. Now, to say we're in a state of shock and bewilderment is an understatement. But given that it's only been about 24 hours since the crash, we really have very few details. But Max Trescott, maybe you can just sort of summarize what we do know at this point.
Sure. Let me mention that Brian Coleman is with us here as well.
I forgot Brian. No, that's okay. Sorry, Brian. No,
see, that's what sort of an event today is.
Yes.
No, it's very, what can I say, disconcerting for all of us. What we do know, we can find from flightaware.com, shows that Launchpad was leaving an airport south of Austin, flying back to his home airport in Killeen, Texas. Short flight, only a little over 100 miles. He did have to deviate a little bit to the east to avoid weather. It didn't really look like that big a deviation, so you know, it was only probably a few miles out of the way. The very end of the track ends up at 2,300 feet, which is about 1,500 feet AGL. So at that point, he must have gone below the reception range for ADS-B data. But what he did do within the last 2 minutes or so, it's clear that he had altered course about 50 degrees so that he was lined up with the final for the Killeen Airport. And the last data shows him, basically established on the extended center line, a little over 3 miles away from the airport. We know that he did crash in a field short of the airport. I talked with a reporter who was at the scene today, and I asked her, how big was the field? Was it smaller than football field? And she said, yes. And there were a lot of trees around there, and apparently there was a fire after the crash as well. The last two and a half minutes of the flight shows him in a descent and also slowing fairly dramatically. In the 2.5 minutes, he dropped 700 feet from about, 800 feet from about 3,100 feet down to 2,300 feet. His ground speed went from 151 miles an hour to 74 miles per hour. And that's pretty much all we know. The weather at the airport, I just for the first time pulled up the METAR a couple of minutes ago. This would have been about 20 to 30 minutes after the crash. Said that visibility at the airport was 10 miles of visibility, sky clear, temperature 27, dew point 23. Altimeter 2994 or 4. And then it's got remarks that says lightning in the distance to the south and the southwest, which was the direction from which he had come and from which he had avoided the storms. So it certainly seems that he avoided the weather, and it doesn't appear that this was weather-related, but somehow he ended up short of the runway, which suggests maybe there was some type of mechanical problem or something like that. So that's pretty much all we know.
Well, of course, there will be an investigation, and we won't speculate. We'll try not to speculate pending the results from the investigation. Although it's, I don't know, it can be somewhat nerve-wracking when you don't know, you don't have information. And we were talking about that a little bit before. Hillel, you were mentioning how the trap you can fall into speculating when there's an accident.
Yeah, I think many of us, especially pilots, will immediately start trying to piece together what happened so we can learn from it. That's, you know, I routinely read NTSB reports on similar aircraft to my own going to places or coming out of places that I've never been to. Try to learn things that I wouldn't have otherwise thought of, you know, other people going before me. So it's just a natural thing to speculate on what happened. And there was, you know, we don't have to think terribly far back at some recent high profile events and everybody speculating on what could have been done or should have been done or faulting this and faulting that long before anybody ever got on the scene to actually look at what happened. And this is for me as well, as Mike, and he mentioned it in his intro, the first time I've experienced a loss of someone in an aircraft that they were piloting. There have been other instances where it was some other variation or combination of either plane or not the pilot or whatever. But this is the first time where I knew the pilot, I was aware of their plane, and I knew that they were flying it. And so it's really surprising. At least I was surprised. I surprised myself how I didn't want to speculate. I just didn't want to get at all in any way, try to second guess what was going on. I didn't want to assume anything. It was just sort of like a visceral reaction to not want to speculate on this. And I looked back and I said, well, obviously, to me, it was because I knew Launchpad personally. And I thought, well, in a broader sense, why shouldn't other pilots be afforded the same benefit of the doubt and let the professionals figure out what happened? And as all of us have said, either before or during the recording, it's just shocking that someone as experienced as Launchpad would, you know, die doing what he loved in a way that he was so familiar, doing something he was so familiar with. And this notion of speculating what might have happened is just, I'm not totally disinterested in doing that. And I'm pretty sure from now on, I will very strongly consider what I'm thinking and saying about others that I don't know when something happens to them.
And for me as well, this was the first time that someone died in an aviation accident that I knew. And I know, obviously, those of you listening, some of you have experienced that and some have not. But when you do experience an aviation-related death of someone that you know, it's really different. It's just really different from it could be the same kind of accident with somebody that you don't know. And it changes your perspective, I think, when it happens. But one of the things about Launchpad that is, well, many people characterize Launchpad as being larger than life. I see that over and over again in the comments and the posts, in the messages. And I can see you all smiling because it's true. And everybody, I think, has a good Launchpad story. There are just so many occasions where Launchpad was being Launchpad, and it was either hysterical or funny or memorable or crazy or something. How about you, Isaac? Do you have a favorite Launchpad story?
Because it related to you, Max, actually, is that you and I were taking our big tour through the Pacific Northwest, and we were had just taken the ferry over from Victoria over to Vancouver, and just as we were departing, you get a phone call, and it's Launchpad, and he's giving you going through the briefing, and he's got so many story ideas he wants to give you and stuff for June and July and stuff coming up for the air show season. And he was on the phone for about a half hour as we were driving through to onto Vancouver and stuff for the rest of the day. But he was just so full of it, enthusiasm and energy, trying to share, give an update for you for future episodes for the show for content. And I first met him in 2008 in person at AirVenture at the Pipistrel booth, which he was the employee of. And boy, and both him and I just hit it off very, very well. And then this past year, he has been for me. I mean, he's been I was going to go nuts and started the Global Aerospace Chat weekly Zoom chat, and he was a regular. That in the military chat, and he was a regular and stuff for that show. And I really got to know him even more weekly doing that, along with Micah and stuff here doing it. And, I'm very happy and honored to have known him. I learned from him, and I want to carry on the passion that he had for aviation and live that example and do that for others is the best example I have.
One of his passions was helping youngsters experience flying in a way that might influence their futures. The EAA Young Eagles program, for example, was one of Launchpad's passions. Yeah, I don't think he ever did anything halfway. I mean, it seems like, when he had a goal, an objective, something he wanted to accomplish, he really dove into it.
Yeah, he was just wired that way.
He would say that when he took one of his kids up in his Falk Wolf, he would say, "You got to understand, you're not in just any airplane. You're in a warbird." And he would say, he'd go on, it was so great to hear him tell this. He'd say, "And you got to understand, when you're in a warbird, there are no passengers in a warbird. There's only crew. So here's a checklist, and you read this off." And the kids loved it.
He loved that airplane, too. Another message that I'm seeing frequently from people is how much they loved his little mini series on the acquisition of that Falk Wolf. And you may remember that little series that we ran. And I'll put in the show notes from the September-December 2019 issue of the Flyer, which comes out from the Commemorative Air Force. There's a special feature in there where Brad wrote the story, the history, the background of his Falk Wolf 149D, and it's kind of fun to read. When you take a look at it, when you read it, you can just imagine Launchpad in your mind. It's sort of written from that standpoint.
Yeah, but certainly the segment that he did, or the segments that he did for the show, it was great hearing him tell that story in his own voice as well.
It was.
The passion just shines through.
There's some other memorable launch pad moments on the show. Max, you pointed out a couple of them.
Well, Launchpad had so many wonderful characteristics, but as I was thinking about my favorite things that he contributed on the show, I really thought about kind of two extremes. One, of course, was Micah's story, where he talked about how Launchpad literally went in to rescue people from a burning building. And then the other one, of course, was him pretending to look for Rob at Air Venture. So on the one hand, we saw the depth of his character. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's Son of Fun, sure. But in the one case, we saw the true depth of his character. And on the other side, we could see the playful side of him and how he was just really willing to, be a little bit silly and have fun. And of course, he was also everything in between those two extremes.
He was. Which extreme would you like to listen to first?
Oh, you pick it.
All right, let's do the fun. Let's do the Where's Rob joke. And I guess the setup for this is that Rob was not at Sun and Fun this past April, right? Had been the previous year. What was that, 2019, I think. Yeah, 2019.
Correct.
So Launchpad, who was there, as was I, created a little joke that he produced for the show, and Rob had no idea.
A lot of people recognize Launchpad. It's really kind of funny. One or two people recognize me, I think by voice, but Launchpad's pretty recognizable. But he was also looking for people.
Hey, Airplane Geeks listeners. Launchpad Marzari here down at Sun and Fun, and I just ran into Rob. Rob? Rob, where are you? I know you're here. You've got to be here.
No. He looked, but Rob, you weren't there.
I know. Where was I anyway?
You were probably in your little office there writing.
Yes, that's right.
Doing some great journalism.
I didn't go.
You didn't go, but a lot of people did. A lot of people did. Well, okay. Yeah, Launchpad, one thing that Launchpad doesn't do is get tired. When he's got something, in his head, something he's looking for, he doesn't give up.
Hey, listeners, Launchpad here. Let's go into the radio station. I'll bet you Rob's in there at Sun and Fun Radio out on the deck. Rob? Well, I know he's got to be here somewhere. He'd never miss Sun and Fun.
And this was all in episode 650?
No, this is in episode 651.
Oh, I see.
Just like you are. Just like you.
I will have to reconnect with Launchpad to tell him that I could have saved him the trouble. I wasn't there.
It's too bad because you get to meet listeners, of course, which is a very exciting thing.
It is a lot.
Yeah,
of fun. It really is.
So here's an example.
Hey, your reporter at large, Launchpad Marzari here, and I've run into another geek.
Hi, my name's Grover McNair.
From?
Raleigh, North Carolina.
And he's down here being a Sun and Fun judge?
Yep.
And he's walking around looking at, and no, he's not going to give me any preferential treatment for chocolate that we're giving him for judging. Oh, no.
Oh, really now? Well, it might be negotiated.
Come see us. Have fun at Sun and Fun. Another happy listener.
Yeah, many people don't realize it unless you attend Sun and Fun or Oshkosh or some of these events. But Launchpad is a bit of a chocolate smuggler, I guess you'd call it. But he's always got some nice German chocolate. But he met some other folks, too.
Hey, Airplane Geeks. We're here at the show, and I've been called out by one of our new listeners.
Hi there. I'm Julian Tucker.
From?
From West Palm Beach.
And he called us out. Now he's a big airplane geek, too, here at Sun and Fun. But who's not a big airplane geek at Sun and Fun?
All right. I think Launchpad's still kicking around here somewhere.
Hey, Airplane Geeks listeners. Max told me if I waited here, I could find Rob. So I'm going to wait out here on the Warbird line. Still waiting. Still waiting for Rob. He's got to show up sooner or later out here on the Warbird line.
That was pretty cruel of you to send him out there and make him wait for Rob.
All right.
I'm sorry. That's really pretty funny.
All right. Thanks for listening to the Airplane Geeks podcast. We'll wrap this up. Find us at airplanegeeks.com. You can send us an email at thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com. And if you want to go straight to the show notes for this episode, well, you can visit airplanegeeks.com, or you can go to airplanegeeks.com/651, because that's the episode number.
Will Launchpad be in this one? Because we don't know where he is right now, right?
Yeah, where is he?
Launchpad.
If I were Rob Mark, where would I be? I'd be in the hangars looking at new products. Let's go there. Rob.
Oh, man. All right. He did a good one.
He did. I'll tell you. We're just all sitting here laughing. Yeah. that was really creative and hilarious. We'll have to thank him.
It was. I don't think I could have fit under the deck, though. Could I? I think it's kind of close.
It is. It's a tight squeeze.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Max, for digging that clip out. That was spread throughout that episode, so thanks for putting that together into one piece.
Where did he come up with the tagline, frequency change approved, good day? Did he ever explain how he came up with that?
Not explicitly. It's kind of a, what was it, Paul Harvey kind of a thing?
Yes.
It's actually what you'll often hear from departing a towered airport. So if you're leaving a towered airport and you're not going to an approach or departure frequency, and they will just say frequency change approved as you leave their space. So it's a standard air traffic control phraseology where you are, the tower or any other. It doesn't have to be a tower. It could be a center or anybody. And you're being sent out of their space and not to another frequency that they've assigned you. They'll just say frequency change approved. And you know, it's courtesy to say good day or something like that if they have the time to say that. But that it's just standard ATC phraseology.
How about the handle Launchpad? Where did that come from?
I figured it out, and it took all day. Does anybody here know? By the way, for sure, I don't think anybody knew.
It's from the Disney show from the late
80s. There you go.
Tailspin. Yeah.
So I was texting with his wife Gabby today. Ask her, and she said, Launchpad being a Disney character, a duck, that always crashes his planes, his quote, any crash you can walk away from is a good one. And she said, well, this didn't hold true for last night, though. And I did just pull up a description from the Disney.fandom.com website about Launchpad McQuack. And by the way, Max, we have got to put a picture of this Disney character in the show notes or a link to it, because it's really quite clever. It says Launchpad McQuack is a pilot introduced in the Disney's 87 to 90 television series DuckTales as Scrooge McDuck's pilot. He was later featured as Darkwing Duck's sidekick in the crossover TV series of the same name and appears as the main character in the 2017 DuckTales reboot series. And then they say, and this is the part where I really go, wow, this is a good fit. Personality. A lovable doofus, Launchpad McQuack may seem absent-minded, yet despite often making mistakes, he always gets his assigned task done competently in the end, and as such, he is a valuable helper for Scrooge McDuck, despite often irritating Scrooge with his ignorance. He's a gentle giant. Now, he was definitely a gentle giant. I'm guessing yes. He was about 6'3", and also very charming and witty. Additionally, Launchpad isn't afraid of anything and remains calm and positive in extreme and intense scenarios, never panicking or losing his cool. In fact, the only things that come close to scaring Launchpad are Scrooge's temper tantrums. He gets on well with Huey, Dewey, Louie, and Webby very well, and is fiercely protective of them. In fact, if the duckling quartet is endangered, he employs his finest piloting skills toward rescuing them. He's also very popular with women. And then finally, it says physical appearance. Launchpad is an anthropomorphic duck and is one of the tallest and bulkiest anthropomorphic animals in the Disneyverse, rivaling Pete. He dresses like a pilot with a scarf, goggles, a helmet, baggy pants, boots designed for big webbed feet, a belt, and a leather jacket. Launchpad also has an imposing athletic physique with a narrow waist, deep rib cage, and generally thicker limbs than most other Disney characters, making him the muscle in Scrooge's and any other teams he is a part of. So it seemed like it was well chosen, nom de plume pen name for Launchpad to use.
It fits on so many levels.
It does. It's really wonderful.
Yeah, it is.
You know, which reminds me of a blooper. Do you guys remember one time on the show, I was on with you guys, and Launchpad was there, and we were doing our greetings, and I said, "Hey, Brad, how you doing?" And he said, "Micah, stop that." And we had to do a retake. He says, "It's Launchpad." I never called him Brad again, ever.
Yeah.
Now, do we know why he never wanted to reveal his first name?
No, I don't.
I think it was at the time while he was on the air, he was involved doing work with the military, and he wanted to remain at least somewhat anonymous.
Because Marzari is such a common name that nobody would ever find him. That's so funny.
I certainly never remembered it from 35 years ago, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And did anyone get one of his postcards in the mail?
No. Did you?
No. Bill from Victoria just mentioned stuff that he would, you know, because when he would run his chocolate contests, it was always you had to send in a postcard.
Oh, did he get any postcards?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. He did. Yes, because he ended up with some Airplane Geek swag somehow, probably from Sun and Fun, that he wanted to. No, he didn't want to sit on it. He wanted to give it away. So he invited listeners to send an aviation postcard, and he would send, you know, the pin or the magnet or whatever it was out. I told Launchpad, I said, you know, I'll pay for that. You don't have to pay for the postage and all. He just refused. He says, no. He was gonna take care of it.
We've brought chocolate up a couple of times here. We should probably just explain the backstory on that. That Launchpad and his wife lived in separate countries for a few years. She lived in Germany and he lived here in the United States. And he was a frequent visitor, though it was a very challenging this last year to get to Germany because of all the pandemic restrictions. But every time Launchpad went to Europe, he would load up on chocolate bars and he would bring them back. And those would be his, I wouldn't say currency, but those would be his way of, just kind of letting people that he wanted to feel special know that he was going to give them a chocolate bar. And so that was just one of his, signature things that he always did. He was the chocolate man.
And it was great German chocolate. It was stuff you couldn't get here in the USA. It was really fabulous. And at one point he did it, I think he did it through the mail. I can't remember exactly how, but I remember sending him a card and I got some chocolate in the mail.
At Sun and Fun, he actually showed up with a little cooler so that the chocolate wouldn't melt. He'd have to carry this little cooler around with him so he could give out the chocolate, you know, as was appropriate.
The true professional.
Yes.
Speaking of Sun and Fun, I was supposed to come to Sun and Fun this year, but I had a small family emergency that kept me home. And I don't know who was more disappointed that I wasn't going to make it, Launchpad or me. Because he and I had plans to do some discussion about some plant idea that he wanted to work on. And when I told him, it looks like I'm not going to make it, he's like, you know, he kept trying to talk me out of the family emergency practically. But not quite. He was a little more tact than that. But he was the disappointment was palpable.
I've been speaking with a couple of reporters during the day. Max, you mentioned that you had as well. And one question that I was asked was to think about what would the legacy of Launchpad be? What legacy would he leave for this community? And David, I don't know if you've got any thoughts on that or any of the others, but I thought it was a good question. It was probably the best question, one of the best questions that I got from any of the reporters that I was talking to. It's just, you know, what's the legacy that the man leaves behind?
pure, unadulterated joy. Hmm. I mean, Max, you commented after Sun and Fun. Brad Launchpad was at his best around kids. Like Micah, I never got to meet him in person, but I've seen other people who've been around, you know, and the way he was with kids is, you know, making an impression on them and making them see how lovely flight is and how cool airplanes are. And the other thing that Brad did was he lived the way, I mean, his life was larger than life. Like, and he always called to check up on you. He'd, you know, he led with his heart, you know, and wore his heart on his sleeve. You know, I think he gave away more heart than chocolate, and that's saying a lot. You got a phone call from him, and you knew that, oh God, this is going to be a couple of hours. You know, you just brace yourself. And he was never not thinking about the next plot, scheme, show, interview. You know, another good term would probably be perpetual motion machine. But he lived a life like a little kid, you know. Who else decides that the best place to have a Zoom call is in the cockpit of your airplane when in the middle of the show the hangar lights go off and he loses signal?
Every 15 minutes.
Yeah. So it just, I mean, that was very much, you know, well, I thought you were going to videotape the call. I thought it would be cool to be in the airplane. He touched us all, you know, and seeing Facebook and, you know, today and reading other people, not one person walked away without having Brad's fingerprints all over you. You somehow,
in a good way,
in a good way. And somehow, you know, you're a better person for having interacted with him, either being a few minutes or years or hours. You know, he was larger than life.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well said. Brian, did you meet up with him?
No, I haven't. And so David's usually the emotional one on the show. And I think this time I'm probably going to beat him out on it. There's so much that I have to say that wanted to say about Launchpad. And I honestly don't think I could get through it. So I wrote a little thing to jar some, you know, accurately reflect my memories and all. And so much of it fits with what's already been said today, which I find really funny that I wrote this about an hour ago and I shared it with Micah. And to hear you guys summarize what I'm about to read is just amazing to me. So, and it starts off. When Micah contacts you and says, call me back right away, you know it's either going to be something really good or something really bad. Yep, and yesterday it was really bad. So Brad, Launchpad Mazari, is a friend that I never met. Like so many podcasters, this technology's enabled friendships to develop, and we just never get to meet the people sometimes. And I've heard it said several times about Oshkosh that the first time you go for the aircraft, the rest of the times you go for the people. Launchpad was one of those people that I was so looking forward to meeting in person. Every interaction I had with him, he was kind, considerate, passionate about flying, and generally an all-around great guy. every interaction I had with him, he was smiling. Although I couldn't always see his face, I could tell just by the tone in his voice how happy he was, to talk about airplanes. He was always willing and wanting to learn and improve. And he was a great listener as well as a talker. And I guess like many pilots, he loved to talk. And that brings me to my first memory or interaction with Launchpad. So when I started as associate producer of the show, Max gave me some guidelines for guests and contributors. One of those guidelines was to have contributors keep their stories to 5 minutes or less.
Yeah,
exactly.
I know.
So in the case of Launchpad, and all of us who have provided content for a show really know that this is something difficult to do. It's hard to distill a story down into just 5 minutes, especially when you're used to hanging around an airport hangar and telling stories for days. So it was my task to encourage Launchpad to keep his contributions to 5 minutes or less. And I was really nervous that I was going to, that he wasn't going to take my suggestions very well. And, you know, certainly not as, and I had really good intentions with these, and I was just going to piss off this great contributor at large. But Launchpad listened to everything that I had to say with a smile in his voice, and he said, "Yep, I get it. I'll try and make my stories a bit shorter." There was no pushback, no nothing, just, "I understand, and I'll try." And over the course of the next few months, although many of his stories were long, Launchpad did shorten them the best he could. My second encounter with Launchpad was regarding something he said in a piece that he contributed to the show. I'm not sure he realized what he said would have an impact on me, nor inspire me to record a piece on how words we say can inspire others. Our words matter. And that was the point of his piece, and he inspired me because his words mattered. And I really wish that I took the time to tell him, and I never did, and that's really going to be a regret that I'm going to have for the rest of my life. So small gestures or words can make a huge impact on someone. It could really change their life, and it did mine. And if you go back to listen to episode 513, you could hear me talk about it. His words mattered. If you can, wave to a kid at an airport. So again, he was talking about kids. Like, kids were a big passion of his. Take them up for a flight. Tell them there is more to aviation than being a pilot. Encourage girls to get into STEM programs. There's so much great stuff for people to do in the field of aviation. Inspire others and make a difference. And Brad did with me. So for the last time, Launchpad, frequency change approved. Good day. And fly safely west.
Well done, Brian. Well done. Yeah, we're all pretty emotional.
Max, there's one more thing that I first need to say about Launchpad.
Okay.
It will give people another perspective and may give people another idea. Because I don't think anyone knows that when Gabby got here, they have a lot of pet rabbits. And Gabby and Launchpad would go weekly, sometimes biweekly, to a rabbit or bunny rescue shelter and take care of rabbits. Who would have thought that Launchpad would be taking care of this huge, huge, big man holding and taking care of these tiny little bunnies? And I can just see it. I can see his smile. I can see his mustache as he's holding the bunny up close to his face and the bunny kissing him. And it's just, I wanted to leave it on that kind of a note.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and I will just add to that, too, with animals. He had his cat, and he always liked to make snide comments about his cat, but he truly loved his cat, and it was always in the background whenever he'd be on a Zoom chat. You would always see the cat close by hovering around him and stuff at the table, and then, you know, trying to get in the way of the microphone. So, yeah, the cat will miss him immensely as well.
And Max, tell us, how did Launchpad come to us? And the title Reporter at Large, was that something you came up with or he came up with? I mean, how did we come across Launchpad?
I think like many of our other contributors, he just wanted to get involved. You know, he came in and he had some ideas, some stories, some interviews that he wanted to do, or he would have an opportunity to do. And he would ask, you know, is it okay if he, you know, visited with the, you know, chief engineer of this company or the CEO of that company, and because he was going to be in that area. I think it just kind of evolved from that. As for the title, The Reporter at Large, of course, that describes both the function or one of the functions that he had, but it also described his physical size. And I don't know exactly. I think he primarily came up with that. It was either that or we were kind of, you know, noodling a title and between the two of us. But I suspect it was, you know, largely his influence that established the, you know, the role of Reporter at Large, Launchpad Marzari.
Yeah, it just seemed like other people just had names, right? Where the Oz Desk came about. Yeah. David had his history segment, or, you know, This Day in Aviation. I really think it just evolved, and he said it once and it stuck.
I was already contributor at large, and Brad became the reporter at large.
Yeah. One more story. This is a recording that Micah made for episode 635.
I've often told you about some of my experiences during my 3 years living in Pueblo, Colorado, but this story is new, even to me. Well, not exactly new, but although it happened to me, I really didn't find out about it until March of 2020. It may be my most extraordinary airplane geek story related to my time in Colorado, Steel City. I moved to Pueblo during the late summer of 1984 to take a job at the university. I remember arriving very late on a Friday night. It had taken me 2 days to drive there from Ohio, with an overnight stop at the Holiday Inn in Lawrence, Kansas. My first day at work was scheduled to be on Monday, so I figured that arriving on Friday would let me settle into my on-campus apartment, rest for a bit after a long 2-day drive, and prepare for an early start on Monday morning. Apparently, that was not to be. At around 7 a.m. Saturday morning, I was awakened by the phone. It was one of the vice presidents, my boss's boss. "Micah," he said, "we have a bit of an urgent matter we need to talk about. Be in my office in an hour." His office? In an hour? I'd only been to his office one other time, some 3 months before during my interview. I wasn't even sure I'd be able to find his office. Plus, now I was worried. What was the urgent matter that had him telling me to be there on a Saturday morning, 2 days before my scheduled start date? Classes weren't in session, and the place was empty as I took my early August morning cross-campus walk. I managed to find the building, made my way to the right office, and found the VP and my boss there waiting for me. We said our hellos, and they perfunctorily asked me about my drive. Then they brought up the reason for this early Saturday morning meeting. "You remember when you interviewed, we told you about the fire in the dorm?" they asked. "Sure," I said. "It was brought up several times." About 18 months prior to my arrival there, there was a fire in a residence hall that may have been the biggest catastrophe to ever strike the college. People were physically injured, and far more were traumatized. In fact, no one on campus, in town, or in the press could ever speak of the dorm without mentioning the fire. You just couldn't get away from it. They went on. "Well, you understand that we know the fire was set. It was definitely arson. And we're pretty sure it was set by one of the residents. Although we have several suspects, we never figured out who did it." "Yes," I said, "I know." Still wondering why they decided to tell me again at 8 a.m. on a Saturday morning, 48 hours before my start date. "You see," they said, "one of the suspects is scheduled to move back into the dorm this year, and we don't know if that should be allowed. On top of that, this suspect is part of your student staff. We thought we should talk about it with you before we made any decisions." I can't even explain the feelings I had when they said that. Questions started racing through my mind that I knew I couldn't ask. For example, if you knew this person was an arson suspect, how did you let them through the interview process to become a staff member? I won't go through all the things I didn't ask. If I had asked them, I'm sure I would have been fired before I even started. But I did ask what the police and fire investigator reports had to say, and could I read them? Then came the shocker. They said they didn't have copies of the reports and had never seen them. Huh? I'm not sure what my face looked like on the outside. I know I was trying to hide my surprise. I tried to slow down before I uttered a sound. After a brief pause, that felt like hours to me, but must have only been a few seconds, I said, "Do you think we can get copies of the reports and read them ourselves? That way we can try to make an informed assessment before we make any decisions." Fortunately, they thought that was a good idea. Agreed, got in touch with the attorneys handling the case for the university, and made arrangements for us to drive up to their office in Colorado Springs to read the reports the next morning. On Sunday morning, we got together at about 10 a.m. and drove the 50 miles north to Colorado Springs to the attorney's office. The door was locked, but when we knocked, a young law clerk greeted us and ushered us into a huge, beautiful conference room. All the investigation materials were laid out for us on a big conference table. We sat down, and each of us started reading reports. There were state and local police reports, sheriff department reports, state and local fire department reports, and state and local arson investigator reports, just to name a few. After about an hour of reading and several cups of coffee, we all came to the same conclusion. We never found out who set the fire. In fact, it's still a mystery. But we all realized that we couldn't take any chances. We figured out what we had to do and planned our strategy. It wasn't an easy decision, but it worked out in the end, and I spent 3 years in Pueblo. In reading the reports, though, we found that one of the suspects that I want to point out was totally cleared was a man who had been running in and out of the fire rescuing people. He was wearing a Nomex flight jacket along with Nomex gloves and a Nomex scarf and mask. The investigators thought he had a hero complex and had started the fire in order to be heralded as a champion. After all, why would someone have all this fire-resistant clothing available to them in a college dorm and then risk his own life to evacuate people from the fire? Apparently, this person had served a hitch in a U.S. Army aviation unit, and he was still enlisted through the Colorado National Guard in an artillery unit that worked with 8-inch howitzers. He kept all his gear in his dorm room so he could have access to it when and if he was called up for duty. So you may ask, what does this have to do with aviation, or the airplane geeks for that matter? That's a good question. Even for me, all this was ancient history, and I mean, I had completely forgotten about it. But then one night, while Launchpad and I were on the phone, he mentioned that he had attended college in Pueblo. He told me that during his last year in the dorm, there was a fire, at which point I shouted into the phone, "That was you?" And then all the memories flooded back. The name I read in the reports about the man in the Nomex was Marzari. He left the college a year before I arrived. But apparently, I've known Launchpad for some 36 years now, even though I've still never met him. And it took a long-distance phone call during the pandemic of 2020 to find out. And sure, while Launchpad flies a folk wolf, hosts great parties at Oshkosh, and can tell you more about a pipistrel than you could possibly imagine, he's also been an arson suspect, but turned out to be a hero. And even though we've never actually met in person, I'm very happy to call him my friend. For the Airplane Geeks, here in Portland, Maine, this is your main man, Micah.
I think we'll close this out with that. We want to thank you for listening. We're sorry to bring you such sad news, but honestly, we've been strengthened by the outpouring of messages we've received from you, from our audience. Now, we don't have any information about an obituary or how requests from the family might materialize, but we'll update the episode post with any of that information. as we receive it. And you can always go straight to this post at airplanegeeks.com/660. Some people in conversations have raised the same two organizations as I did, actually, when it comes to making charitable donations in Launchpad's name. The EAA, certainly the Young Eagles Program, and also the Commemorative Air Force. Both of those were organizations that were major in his life, in Brad's life. He was, like everything else, he dove into those with all that he had.
Let's all send, I hate the phrase thoughts and prayers. I really hate it, but let's send them to Gabby.
Thanks, everyone, for your support. We'll talk to you soon.
May his memory be a blessing.